Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Ecclesia Radio, brought to you by We Hold These Truths and Project Straight Gate. We're back on the air here. We're doing a new format for our program, our investigation in Bible study. We are actually going to be on a podcast. Tonight, we've Travis with me here in the studio, and we've got Chuck online here. We're not going to be doing a investigation. We were in the book of Daniel. Mark Horton will be joining us again shortly. But we're going to start out with our unheralded news portion of the show. Chuck, would you like to lead us off here, please?
Yes, indeed. And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And our unheralded news, it, of course, goes many directions. But this week, issues that we think are really important center around events in the Middle East, in Israel and Palestine, with the meetings going on between President Obama and the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and of course Mahmoud Abbas, who is supposedly the leader of the Palestinian people, this being a peace effort. We think that the way this plays out is much different than that politically, and we think most Americans are completely puzzled and misled about who really is the leader of the Palestinian people. And so we have focused on some news that tells us a good bit about what happens in Palestine. One of the things, of course, that we have known about in the past and have talked about many times is that the Israeli government simply arrests people who are democratically elected to lead the Palestinian people in the event that they don't like the people who were elected. And one of the articles today comes from Haaretz. It's a November 10th article, but this happens all the time. It's about Mahmoud Rabahi, who has been previously arrested by the Israelis in 2006 after the capture of Gilead Shalit. Now, Mr. Shalit, of course, was a soldier who was actually captured in a war situation on the Gazan border and has been held ever since by Hamas in Gaza City. And wherever they have him stashed away, they haven't let Israel know because they haven't been able to find him and get him loose. He is essentially a prisoner of war, according to Hamas, and naturally they tell us that he is a victim of terrorism. But he was arrested in uniform, so we would normally consider that to be a prisoner of war. Israeli soldiers arrested a prominent Hamas lawmaker from the West Bank in a pre-dawn raid on Wednesdays, Israel's military stated. The military said in a statement that about this man, Mahmoud Rabahi, that he'd been involved in recent Hamas activities, whatever that is. It gave no further details. Israel considers Hamas an Iranian-backed militant group, and it's killed hundreds of Israelis in suicide bombings and other attacks. Now, that phrase, of course, is a typical tossed-in phrase that comes from Haaretz, because Haaretz is a Israeli newspaper. So they always spout the party line, and the party line, of course, is Hamas has been responsible for killing many Israelis in suicide bombings and other attacks. A terrorist organization, they call them, and they say Rabahi's wife, Amani, confirms that her husband has been arrested and said that the troops had their faces masked. Rabahi was among dozens of Hamas lawmakers and cabinet ministers arrested in 2006 after the Hamas-linked Palestinian militants in the Gaza Strip captured the Israeli soldier Gilead Shalit. Rabahi was released in 2009. So now they're telling us, Haaretz is telling us, that this man was arrested and never charged with anything and held from 2006 to 2009, or 3 years. How would you like to be arrested and held for 3 years without being charged with anything?
Kind of like what's happening in Guantanamo, exactly. I mean, there's been...
It's Guantanamo every day, Tom, yeah. Exactly right. Israel is Guantanamo every day. And They said that it was part of a comprehensive, systematic war against our homeland. Hamas has ruled Gaza. Now, this is, again, the Israeli newspapers editorializing. They say Hamas has ruled Gaza since the ousted forces loyal to President Mahmoud Abbas took place in 2007. So here now we have the present man who's meeting with our President Obama, named Mahmoud Abbas, and they're saying that he was ousted in 2007, which leaving Abbas government governing only in the West Bank. So, again, this is more Israeli editorializing because Mahmoud Abbas was thrown out, unelected, by all over Palestine. It was a general election that was not simply in the West, in the West Bank or in Gaza. It was a general election that Jimmy Carter went and supervised. And Mahmoud Abbas, who's now meeting with our president and pretends to be the leader of the Palestinian people, was unelected in 2007. So this story tells part of the truth and part falsehood in that respect. This is very typical of the Israeli papers. They tell a little bit of the truth and a little bit of falsehood. It says, to summarize this, Hamas members in the West Bank are subject to arrest by Israeli and Palestinian security forces, and most rank-and-file members keep a low profile. So it then says that these Hamas people are not only subject to being arrested by Israeli military, but also by Palestinian security forces. Well, who are they? Of course, they are the security forces that work for Mahmoud Abbas and the organization called the Palestine Liberation Organization, or the PLO, or more recently it's been called the Palestinian Authority. This story is a good introduction to what we want to talk about tonight. So I'll stop there and see if there's any discussion right now.
I might throw in an interesting recent note here in Phoenix. Ron Paul, Congressman Ron Paul, came to town, and we Hold These Truths actually were there, and we're holding up our sign, No More Wars for Israel. And it was interesting, the reactions were mostly favorable from the people. It was mostly, it was a mixture. There were probably over 300 people there. Of course, this was on the ASU, Arizona State University campus. He was in town for some other speaking engagements and fundraising. But the comments from a lot of people actually appreciated and thanked us for being there with the sign. We handed out some literature, and it was interesting. We had one guy that took the literature and came back a little bit later and actually tore it all up. So he obviously, we figure, must
be. Well, it didn't sound like he was the good guy, huh?
Well, he was there supporting Ron Paul, and maybe his understanding obviously was kind of limited, because when it comes to wars and even support for Israel, Ron Paul has been very firm and has voted consistently opposing foreign aid and special privileges for Israel or Egypt, for that matter. And so it's kind of curious that somebody that would be there. He obviously wasn't a student, I don't think, because he was in his 50s, I would guess, that would be upset by seeing a sign, No More Wars for Israel, and then reading the paper we were handing out was the report by Chuck on a, this was at Denver University, where the IDF, Israeli Defense Force representative, was telling people about how ethical the IDF is. And, of course, as we've talked about in previous broadcasts, there has been a campaign by representatives from the IDF at campuses around the U.S. trying to improve their image by giving these talks. In fact, the one that we had was here in Phoenix at Arizona State University just a few weeks ago. The former military guy that lives here in the U.S., IDF guy, said that, of course, they use the Bible as their guide, and it's very ethical. So they're doing everything to smooth over and cover up what they really are doing, what they have done in places like Gaza, the massacre that occurred there 2008-2009. Chuck?
Okay. Now, there is another story that's related to this one, and it closes the loop on this issue of the Palestinian people and leads up, I guess, to our Pharisee Watch that we'll be discussing later. This story appears it's a feature story in the Financial Times of London. Now, this is a for-fee magazine. It's probably one of the pricier and most prestigious financial publications in the world. And it's something I read every morning. I wouldn't start the day without reading Financial Times because it has all kinds of stories and it's very well written. And it touches on anything that might possibly have significance to business people. So therefore, it gets into issues like what has gone on in West Bank and Gaza. And the Financial Times talks about the very issue that we're discussing in the previous story about the Israeli forces capturing Hamas leaders. And what this article in Financial Times, and I think all of you have it in front of you, what this story in Financial Times talks about is that the Palestinian Authority is now torturing regularly torturing its own citizens. So picture someone who lives in the West Bank. And not in Gaza, but in the West Bank, this torturing is not going on in the Gaza Strip because the Palestinian Authority doesn't have any authority in the Gaza Strip. They have basically been removed from leadership there by Hamas, and Hamas doesn't apparently torture its own citizens. But the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank, according to the story in Financial Times, regularly captures, holds, and for long, protracted periods of time, and openly, rather openly tortures them, much like Abu Ghraib, but much worse. The Financial Times, with a reporter in Jerusalem, interviewed the wives of people who were in prison being held there for long periods of time, and it also interviewed former prisoners who had been captured by the Palestinian Authority and taken off to prison and tortured very violently. I'm not talking about small things. I'm talking about people who never can walk again as a result of their treatment in prison. I'm talking about people who are basically dying on their feet in the prison, and their families go to see them, and they can see that they're deteriorating physically right in front of their eyes. And of course, the prisoners don't dare say they're being tortured while they're in there. This is being done not by the Israeli government, but by the Palestinian Authority, and the same people are being oftentimes captured and tortured. One of the people interviewed in the story, a Financial Times story, had also already undergone a long imprisonment by the Israeli government, and now he was imprisoned by the Palestinian Authority, and it described his treatment there. Now, what is this all about, is the question. Why is the Palestinian Authority torturing Palestinians? The reason is that Mahmoud Abbas is not an elected official. He has been an ousted official, and he's kept in power by the United States government and the Israeli government. He is essentially our man in Palestine, and that's why he gets to put on a $1,000 suit and come and associate with Netanyahu and President Obama at these peace conference meetings and then issue statements. Generally speaking, Mahmoud Abbas walks a half step behind the other people at these conferences, and he speaks when he's spoken to. So he's persona non grata. He's a figurehead only, someone there for appearances. From time to time, we've written stories about Mahmoud Abbas and about his family, who is a big business family in Palestine. There are business families who make a lot of money there. He naturally gets all kinds of favors, and it's family graft on the Palestinian side of their leadership as well as on the Israeli side. So if you go to our website, you'll find the story about Financial Times. You'll have to go to Financial Times to read the whole story. It's a for-fee publication, but it's very important to realize that the Palestinian people are now caught between being tortured by the leaders of their own government and being tortured by the Israelis at the very moment when, of course, we're pretending to be in peace treaties with them. And another story that's recently out also, it talks about the fighter planes, I think it's F-16As now. Is that right? F-15As or F-16? It's a new one.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, and Israel wants 20 of them. They'd like to have a gift of 20 of these. And the reason they want at least 20 is because Saudi Arabia has purchased 80 or maybe 85 of these high-end latest generation warships. And so Israel is asking that we give them 20 so that they will be at parity with Saudi Arabia, except that they think they should have a lot more because 20 is not as good as 80 to them. Saudi Arabia, of course, recycles oil money back into the United States to pay for their ships that they buy. Israel, of course, doesn't pay anything for them. They expect to get them given to them. So these stories, I think, focus on the life of the Palestinian today, caught between the Israeli government and the American and Israeli-backed Palestinian Authority, both which pretends to be for their champion. And I think it explains, if you understand this, it explains why Hamas is the popular government of the Palestinian people.
Yes, that certainly makes sense. But, of course, the job that has been done through all the propaganda mechanisms of our government and media, of course, have demonized Hamas.
Right.
To the point that most people can't see through this.
Right. Now, bringing this political question back down to the religious question, we have said since day one that the reason all of this happens is because we have a faction in our country that calls themselves Christians, and a few of their number actually call themselves Christian Zionists, like John Hagee and the Looney Fringe. But according to a poll taken by Gallup, 78% of all the people who would identify themselves as the Christian right voted Republican in the last election, and that equates basically with supporting the war. Other polls, which we have also focused on Heralded News, talk about the Pew poll, for instance, supports this latest exit poll of the Gallup people. And the Pew poll identifies the people who have supported the who support the Israeli war effort as being born again, or who in the majority of cases identify themselves as born again. That doesn't mean all born again people do that, but it's a significant enough trend that this polling company asks the question, are you born again? And from that, they're able to guess how they vote on issues such as support for Israel.
Well, they figured it out, I guess.
Yes, the poll people have figured it out. They figured out what question you ask to get the answer that tells them what they want to know, which is who votes for the continuation of the wars in the Middle East and who votes against it. Now, this group brings it back down to our Christian Zionist friends and our concerns about Christian Zionism, because it constitutes, according to the Gallup polls, approximately 35% of all the voters 35% of all the Americans, and that adds up to some 100 million people. And this, of course, is the target audience if we hold these truths, and it is our concern about the direction of our Christian brothers.
Yes, the disconnect. There seems to be a disconnect, and we're seeing this now, of course, in the new Republican Tea Party candidates who are expressing support. In fact, who's the one that was, I just forgot his name, that was...
The Alaskan guy?
That was giving support
Jennings
to,
or something?
To Benton. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, that guy, I think, Netanyahu, you know, he's basically going to do everything he can to make sure Israel helped.
There was an interesting story from a Christian guy named Frankie Schaefer. He is very ashamed of his background as an evangelical, I should say as a Christian Zionist. He calls himself a Christian Zionist. He picks on Tim LaHaye and Jerry Jenkins and the Left Behind series, and he talks about the abuses that have resulted from his own father, Frank Schaefer Sr., who's well known to many Christians, considers a leader of the Christian Zionist right.
Francis Schaefer, wasn't it? It's not Frank, I thought it was Francis Schaefer.
Yeah, they call him Frankie.
The younger
man is called Frankie, but his name is indeed Francis Schaefer.
And his father's name was Francis Schaefer.
Francis Schaefer, and he was a senior, and Frankie Schaefer, is the junior, and he's the one who's writing now. His father's dead. There's a story on our. On our website about that, the End Times Election Results of Christian Zionist Right by Francis Schaefer, who we identified as Frank Schaefer, but he is Francis Schaefer. The Pew poll item is on there, and Frank Schaefer in the election right said, this is a quote, Jerry Jenkins and Tim LaHaye Left Behind series of 16 novels so far represents everything that is the most deranged about religion. Deranged, believe it or not. It also is the reason and the symptom of the hysteria that grips us, that grips so many conservatives in the Republican Party. And, of course, I think the Tea Party is part of that. Frankly, to borrow from John Stewart, they do believe that these are the end times, not just hard times, end quote, from Frankie Schaefer. Those are very encouraging things that are happening. Tom, it's good to hear about your efforts on the campus there, and that's excellent. And I don't like to spread anecdotes that we haven't written about yet. We haven't written this down, but I attended a very remarkable picket myself on Sunday night that was pretty new to me, a prominent college professor at Denver University put this on, and the organization being picketed was the Jewish Federation, which is the black tie people. I mean, they're the most prestigious of the old-line Jewish organizations. And they had as their guest John Hagee speaking to them. And due to a protest, John Hagee was disinvited, and instead they had this guy named Brog, David Brog, who's John Hagee's assistant, and he came all the way to Denver, Colorado, and on a cold Sunday night at a dinner that had they were expecting 1,200 people, he spoke to the most prominent Jews in Colorado, I guess, and one of those very prominent Jews was picketing, and he was saying that this was all wrong, that they were Hagee is not on their side. I went because I know that most of the Jewish people who went and who I met there are really anti-Zionists. But they were trying to encourage dissent, basically, amongst the ranks of this very prominent Jewish organization. And they were there telling them that it was all wrong. I was there with Project Straight Gate sign, and some of them did talk to me. And a couple of them told me that we were absolutely right. Christian Zionists do make war. They said so. They agreed.
Well, the interesting thing, Chuck, was the fact that the dissent for Hagee was actually from Jewish members. This was not from people like ourselves. This was actually from within the Jewish community.
I would say almost everyone there except myself and two or three other people, we were all invited. This college professor invited numerous people, and some came from pro-Palestinian organizations. But it was there were several Jewish people there who were participating in it. The majority was definitely Jewish.
No, I meant the Jewish...
And the organizers.
The Jewish organization that was going to bring this Hagee in. So it was actually dissent from its own members.
They had dissent from their own members sufficiently so that they disinvited Hagee.
Yes.
But they let Brog come and because he's Jewish. And Brog, of course, is Hagee's Jewish sidekick.
Right.
And the protest that I joined in, essentially were saying Brog is the same as Hagee. Why are you letting Hagee in if you disinvited? Why are you letting Brog in if you disinvited Hagee? This is his clone. Why are you letting him come in and speak to you? They were very pointed in their in their way of approaching it. So. Again, while we have a lot of that we can disagree with Jewish dissenting groups who are dissenting from other Jewish groups, and we want to be careful not to get involved in their religious differences, still it is encouraging that there is resistance, don't you think?
Yes.
That there's some resistance showing up. And I think you had that example of that with Finkelstein, who came to Arizona State University.
Yes, and that was the interesting thing. There really weren't dissenters there. As we mentioned, he made it very pointed that he would welcome any critical statements or questions, and no one came forward out of that crowd of over 350 people. So there is a little change.
There was a little change. They felt a little outnumbered. So it's very, very encouraging, and we need to keep it up.
The IDF guy at the speech also, after the Palestinian, pro-Palestinian people got up and left, there was hardly anybody left.
Less than 15 people.
15?
Yeah, if that many, actually.
So you had a walkout there, a staged walkout of the meeting, and there was nobody much left to hear this speaker who was brought in from out of town. So that's really a good sign.
And the video, which you can view by just going to our website, WHTT.org, in the story about the IDF there, there's a link to the video that was produced by the Students for Justice in Palestine. And it's very well done. It actually is very excellent. And our hats off.
Very well. Well, are you ready to launch into this Pharisee Watch then? Does everybody have it in front of them? No biblical support for Christian Zionist political views. It was emailed to everyone. So if you look in your Yahoo email account, you should have a copy of it there. And it's headed, No Biblical Support for Christian Zionist Political Views by Charles E. Carlson, November 21st, 2010. And suppose I just read it, and then we discuss it briefly. And this is basically our scriptural lesson for tonight is our statement here. There is no... That we were saying there is no it denies Zionism, and we'll read it since I'm the only one who has it. I'll have to be the one to read it unless one of you can find it real quick. All right, it's short. Zionism denies all basic teachings of Jesus and the prophets. The church-centered group that makes up the largest voting bloc in the U.S. practices the reverse of what its leaders say they believe. Southern Baptists and most non-denominational megachurches, often led by TV celebrities, profess that the Bible is the literal, inerrant Word of God, preserved by God's hand. In fact, leaders teach not from the Word, but from the footnotes and the commentaries inserted into the Bible by men who changed what the Bible actually says. only by resorting to man-made distortions are Christian Zionist leaders able to support the political machine that thrives on war. And, of course, we must, in our efforts, link Zionism to war. That's something that we need to do. A growing list of fine authors see that this subsect that calls itself Christianity is really doing what this is, what they're really doing. Unfortunately, most have stopped short at explaining why and how Zionist leaders get away with it. John Hagee and Tim LaHaye are anything but literal in their reading of the Bible. They promote the most destructive distortion of Christ's words ever seen on the planet. A Gallup poll on May 25, 27, stated that one-third of Americans today believe the Bible is absolutely accurate and it should be taken literally, word for word. The Pew Foundation confirms there are 100 million believers. And the polls, and I'm talking about believers in this idea, and the polls report that they tend to vote in a block identified today as the Christian right, end quote. In Onward Christian Zionists, Boston Globe article dated 8-23-10, a journalist named Jim Carroll, a very fine one, observed that Christian Zionism is shorthand for the idea that the return of Jews to the Holy Land is a prerequisite for the return of Jesus the Messiah and the final redemption of the world, end quote. Carroll asks if fundamentalism is, quote, evidence of destruction of a destructive yet widespread religious attitude that contributes to the political impasse that continues to stymie Palestinian and Israeli peace negotiations. So he's asking that as a rhetorical question, I think. Is Christian Zionism at the root of this problem? And, of course, you and I quickly agree that it certainly is. Carroll then writes, quote, American Christian Zionism is a particularly lethal form of contemporary fundamentalism, theologically uncritical and dangerously triumphantist. It is bad for Israel, Palestine, America, and peace, end quote. And so we conclude, were it not for these millions of Americans who support Israel's war-making agenda in the Middle East, there would not be an occupation of Iraq, Afghanistan, or Palestine, and children would be could sleep soundly in Lebanon, Iran, and Gaza, confident that no American-made bombs would fall on their bed tonight. The next issue will be part two, a look at the scriptural Christian, at the scriptures that Christian Zionists rely upon as their source of truth. We will offer two of the of many examples from Christian scriptures that show there is no biblical support for Christian Zionist political view in support of war. And that's the close of this article. Now, the second edition has not been written, and so I'm going to ask your help here, gentlemen, to support this view of what Christian Zionists say, the scripture says, that they contend supports war, and why there is no support for them for that position.
Well, of course, now, I agree, and we've talked about this time and time again, that there is no justification when you look at Jesus' words and compare it, because what he tells us is very compelling, to love our neighbors as ourselves, blessed are the peacemakers. It just there's a total disconnect between what Christian Zionists believe. Just like this gentleman that ripped up our little flyer there. I mean, he was so enamored with obviously with the state of Israel that they could do nothing wrong, but yet if he was at a Ron Paul rally, he would certainly would be understand the unconstitutional nature of the wars that we've been embroiled in some of these mm-hmm. other aspects. It's very curious. So.
I wonder if someone could read, Tom, since you brought up Matthew 5, the first 10 or 12 verses, starting with verse 1 in Matthew 5 through verse 10.
Okay.
Or 12. Does someone have a Bible handy that you can read that? I'm sort of an incompetent Bible reader. I like to have other people read when possible. Matthew 5, you quoted some of these Beatitudes.
Seeing the crowds, he went up on the mountain, and when he sat down, his disciples came to him, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for his righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you."
Thank you very much, Tom. And that was really a good choice to bring up, because this is the root of this is certainly one of the most powerful statements of Christianity that you can find anywhere, and it's unrefuted anywhere in anything else Jesus has said. So now we ask the question: how does John Hagee deal with these verses when his congregation comes to him and says, "Look, you said that we need a preemptive bombing of the state of Iran, but these verses not only say, 'Blessed are the peacemakers, for they are the sons of God,' but it says,
'Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy.'" So where
they shall
is the
receive mercy,
mercy. In a statement calling for a bombing on Iran? I mean, there is no mercy there.
Yes, that's absolutely right. So then, what does John Hagee rely upon when someone asks him about these verses? Certainly, somebody must once in a while ask him, "What about Matthew 5? To answer my own question, and this is the answer that's going to be given in the Pharisee Watch that will come out in a week, and which I hope you'll read, the footnotes in the Scofield Reference Bible on 997 polish off the whole Beatitudes in about as much type as the Beatitudes take themselves. And what it basically does is it says they don't have any application to us now. That this application is only about something that's way off in the future that hasn't come yet. And Jesus was not giving his followers a set of rules to live by. No, he was giving them a fanciful tale of what they could look for when his kingdom would come in the future. So in order to explain to you how pernicious this really is, I want to read a little bit from the Scofield Reference Bible, which is a footnote number 5-3, and it's the notes to this these very verses that Tom just read. And here's what it says: "Having announced that the kingdom of heaven is at hand, the king, now in a sermon on the mount, declares to his disciples the principles of that kingdom." Well, to begin with, this Sermon on the Mount is not preceded by a statement about a future kingdom that is at hand or any other time. It's simply not there. That's simply interjected into it. The words that come before this chapter 8 was about Jesus in Galilee teaching, curing the sick, and how his fame spread and so on, and that there followed him a great multitude of people from Galilee and from the Decapolis and from Jerusalem and from Judea and from beyond the Jordan. And it doesn't say anything about him declaring that a kingdom is at hand. So that's interjected in to make this seem to fit. Now, the Scofield Reference Bible also prepares you for this by inserting an italized footnote in between the verses. So just before chapter 5, it says, the principles and the rules of the kingdom, the Sermon on the Mount. So it's the rules of the kingdom, not the rules for now. In other words, it's not rules for his disciples to live by, it's rules of the kingdom. Then the next verse goes on and says, Christ here also declares that he has come to fulfill the law. And he does say that elsewhere, but not here. He says, which he has now proceeds to do in part in the Sermon on the Mount by showing that the divine law deals with thoughts and motives as well as the overt acts, and by abrogating certain concessions made formerly because of the hardness of men's hearts. Now, this is all gibbledygook, I would say. What does all that mean? I don't know. In the Sermon on the Mount, Christ set forth the perfect standard of righteousness demanded by the law. Thus, he demonstrates that all men are sinners, habitually falling short of the divine standard, and therefore salvation by works of law is impossible. So what's been stated in this footnote by the Oxford University Press is Jesus didn't mean any of this. He was simply giving people an illustration how impossible it is to live by the law. Well, in the first place, these statements about being humble, meek, and so on are not stated in the Ten Commandments. They're Jesus' interpretations. And in no way does he say that he's giving his followers some philosophical idea of some future kingdom. I'll go on just with the punchline here. Though the law is expressed in the Sermon on the Mount, it cannot save sinners. And the redemption of the present age are not under the law. Nevertheless, both the Mosaic Law and the Sermon on the Mount are part of the Holy Scriptures, which is inspired by God, and therefore profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, and for the redemption of all ages. So what this is just a nice story, but you don't have to take it seriously, because there's no way for you to live up to this law, to these statements that Jesus has given. Therefore, it really isn't part of something today, but it is something off in the future kingdom, which, of course, the evangelical notion or the dispensational notion is yet to come, 2,000 years after Christ and still not here, and off somewhere in the future. That is how dispensationalists handle the Beatitudes. They simply say they don't apply to you.
Or in the case of thinking of some of these Christian Zionists, the case for, say, example, blessed are the merciful. Well, that might be the blessed of all the merciful who deserve to be, have mercy upon them, whoever I choose to have mercy. So I must have mercy on Israel, but I don't necessarily have to have mercy on Palestinians.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they find some other rule that allows them that that racial distinction.
Yeah.
But that'd be,
well,
okay,
no. Of course, the belief that God gave the land to Israel. So that.
Okay. Going back to that in Genesis 12, the whole idea of the gift of land coming from footnotes of an old story.
Another issue about future kingdom, you know, if we take the 70 A.D., well, before 70 A.D., when Christ was resurrected, he was the temple that was destroyed in 3 days, and in 3 days it was built again. And so, therefore, the kingdom is at hand, has been ever since Christ was resurrected.
Yes, I think that,
kingdom.
Okay. And do you think Christ is talking about the kingdom in his time?
Like Mark has taught us, he replaced the temple.
He brought the kingdom in his time, so we live in the kingdom.
That's what he's been teaching us.
So if that is the case, then how should we interpret the Beatitudes? Blessed are, I mean, none of us can live up to these standards. We know that, but how should we view this? Is it applicable to us or not?
They're applicable today, absolutely. Because
so we have to do our very best to follow these things.
Absolutely. He said, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments.
Okay.
Good
Even
point.
Though you can't, you know, but you've got to try.
Yeah. So this comes down, I know, to Tom's and Travis, you both had experience with holding the big sign that says, blessed are the peacemakers, in front of the evangelical church, the dispensational church or the Christian Zionist church, however you want to express it. And you've had the experience of doing that. What is the response of the ardent Christian Zionist to that beatitude?
Well, I haven't had too many verbals, but I've had a lot of sneers.
Yes. Essentially, the Christian Zionist church sneers at the idea of blessed are the peacemakers.
Well, again, there's a disconnect because they see a war, for example, in Iraq as just war and so forth. So there's a total disconnect there. The one that's more obvious is the sign that we hold, choose life, not war, because that short circuits
the pro-life movement.
Most Christians claim that they're pro-life, and you know, so they don't have any qualms about preventing abortions, but you know, the killing of innocent children in Iraq or Palestine, whatever, those are collateral damage, if you will. In other words, they don't connect the two. They're inconsistent in what their beliefs are, and that kind of a sign short circuits them. Whereas, plus out of the peacemakers, I don't know. I've never gotten into discussion about it. It's been more on the other sign, choose life, not war, because that's the one that really seems to short circuit.
Yeah, the war issue sets them off, right?
Right.
Well, I think you're right. The leaders of the Christian Zionist movement would come out and argue with you and say that's not applicable to us. Jesus is talking about the millennial kingdom, when everything is going to be perfect and the lion will lay down with the lamb, and you're ignorant because you don't realize that Jesus didn't mean it when he said, blessed are the peacemakers. He didn't mean that applied to people in his time or that it applies to us. It applies to a perfect kingdom that only he can bring about. And as the Scofield Reference Bible says, that you can't possibly achieve all this, so you can't find salvation by trying to achieve these things.
Well,
no need.
That we are the peacemakers. The United States, our military, are the peacemakers.
Oh, yeah, but we've got an airplane called the Peacemaker, don't we? Yeah. Some kind of a weapon. We have a weapon called the Peacemaker, even. I forgot what it is now. Well, anyway, that's our first E-Watch study for tonight. We will hope that this little story is effective when we finish it and put it out, and this is what we'll be talking about, Matthew 5.
Okay, well, thank you, Jeff. This will end our broadcast here for tonight. This will be available on the podcast service, and that information will be available online, how you can access that. Any other further comments before we sign off here?
Blessed are the peacemakers.
All right.
Amen.
Good night, and God bless.